Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Sports is business. And whenever you are procuring talent, you must start with a criteria.
Being owners of this league and wanting our league to be the best in the world, how do we make it better?
The valuations are getting so high, the list of people who could purchase a team is getting really short.
We have 8 strategic investment areas when you look at the world of sports.
The NBA is already in 210 countries around the world.
NFL is an amazing thing for the sports betting industry.
We have the World Cup coming in 2026. To North America.
Hey, if I get $1 million for going to a school, trust me, I'll be there.
Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damian Sassauer.
Coming up on the show, we talk boxing with the president of Top Rank Boxing, Todd DeBuff. And we'll talk to him about how he's trying to build more interest in boxing and what he's doing to bring the sport to the next generation of fans.
As you know, the Super Bowl, everybody comes to the town of the Super Bowl. All the media is there. And we're going to activate with our media partner, ESPN, and everybody to bring them a high-level prize fight.
Then we shift to MMA and talk with Don Davis. He's the founder, chairman, and co-owner of the Professional Fighters League, which bills itself as the world's fastest-growing sports league.
Yeah, people are fans of other sports like the NBA or the NFL. The Professional Fighters League is just the same. By that, I mean we have a regular season, playoffs, and championship. It's win and advance, lose, and go home.
All that is straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. But first, Scarlett had the opportunity to have a unique conversation. She spoke with Jeff Hall. He's Senior Associate Director of Athletics for Sports Marketing at Cornell University. And they're looking ahead to the annual Red Hot Hockey event. Let's take a listen to a bit of that conversation.
Who's ready for college hockey in the world's most famous arena Thanksgiving weekend? The upcoming game between Cornell University's Big Red and Boston University's Terriers at Madison Square Garden has become a tradition for the alumni of both schools. It's called Red Hot Hockey, and it's thanks in large part to the efforts of Jeff Hall, Deputy Athletic Director for External Relations at Cornell University. And full disclosure, everyone, I am a Cornell alum and have been to, I believe, almost every game. Jeff, so good to speak with you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the time.
So when Cornell faces off against BU on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, this will mark the 9th time that Madison Square Garden has hosted this game. Give us the origin story, because I know you've been a driving force behind this series.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I don't know about a driving force. I'm just kind of hanging on and trying to help navigate the whole event, certainly from Cornell's perspective. But it actually originated back in 2000, prior to 2007, from Boston University's previous athletic director, Mike Lynch, when he had reached out with the idea and concept of having a game at Madison Square Garden. And we've had some history with Boston University from a hockey standpoint, going back to 1925 when we originally met, and no, I wasn't around at that time, but we've had a lot of history with hockey with them, and so we started having some conversations about the logistics and that potentially coming to fruition, and with two storied hockey programs, and at the time Madison Square Garden was also looking to get more involved with college hockey. So it
Oh,
it really just kind of all came together, and the timing of it was very good. And
so
we both also have a very strong alumni bases, which made it, you know, that much more of interest.
Yeah, if anyone's ever gone to the game, I mean, it is packed in there, and the school team colors are red and white for both, so it can get really confusing in trying to figure out which fans are rooting for which team. So I had not realized that BU kind of made the initial overture. Why Madison Square Garden? If it was BU that made the initial overture, why not have the game, say, in Boston?
Well, I think it wanted to be a kind of concept was having a neutral site, and certainly, you know, Madison Square Garden, right, the most iconic arena in the world. And again, the alumni bases that we both have in New York City, in the surrounding New York City area, those were all reasons and factors of putting the whole game together, basically.
What's been the feedback from these alumni bases? Because as I mentioned, many of these games I've attended have been sold out, and it is loud in there. I mean, it's loud for a New York Rangers hockey game or a New York Knicks game, but you get two college hockey team crowds in there, and there's chants, there's cheering for everything. It is a scene.
Oh, it is. It's a tremendous event for our young alumni or old alumni and current student base. And I think that's kind of what makes it a little bit unique is you have people from all different eras attending the game. You mentioned the fact that it's all red and white, and it's really kind of interesting. You don't know who's rooting for who until a goal is scored by one of the schools and they all stand up and cheer. So, the attendances of it have been phenomenal. The first 5 years we did this, we were over 18,000, and we're certainly in the challenging for that every year and right in that ballpark. So, as you mentioned, it's also been pretty balanced. This is will be the upcoming ninth game that we've played, and out of the eight, it's been. 3-3 and two ties. So very balanced from a competitive standpoint as well.
Okay, so maybe this year we'll break the tie. And by the way, full disclosure, we did reach out to BU, but their athletic director was not available. So we'll get them in 2 years' time to balance things out as well. Jeff, I always thought that, and I appreciate your bringing up that Cornell played BU back in 1925, but I thought the big rivalry with Cornell hockey was Harvard because of that movie, Love Story.
Yeah, no, that certainly is another rivalry that we have, certainly within the Ivy League and ECAC. But again, going back to 25 is when that the rivalry with BU started. So, again, that was one of the other reasons to kind of reconnect. And since that, we've also played them in other sports as well. You know, basketball and other events. So it's great just to reconnect them. They're such a great. Wonderful institution and just wonderful people to work with.
Absolutely. What kind of effect has Red Hot Hockey had on fundraising? Obviously, the alumni, young alumni, older alumni are very engaged in this series. I'm curious as to whether you've started keeping track on this, whether there's a lot of cooperation with the fundraising departments.
Yeah, I don't have exact numbers in terms of how it's impacted from a financial standpoint, but I can say just from a support standpoint, this is one of our biggest annual fundraising events, from the university, from an athletics perspective. It's just, it's been tremendous. We have alumni that are coming from all over, certainly the Northeast corridor, and it's just really kind of, even some of the alumni, I think that maybe weren't necessarily as close to athletics, have become closer to athletics.
Yeah.
It's really brought everybody together. And that goes not only for our alumni, but even for the people within Cornell and the institution and being able to work together with our coworkers within alumni affairs. And I must say, they are the huge driving force of this and all their communications and all they do to help support this. For us coming down to New York City. So they're just tremendous supporters of this event, and it wouldn't be nearly as successful without them.
And it's notable, too, that of course, Cornell University has a large presence in New York City. Obviously, the alumni base, but Cornell Med School and Cornell Tech on Roosevelt Island, you know, it has a big presence. So I'm curious, does someone from Cornell's administration always attend the game? I've seen Cornell alum who have gone on to play in the NHL come to the games. But talk a little bit about the support institutionally.
Yeah, institutionally, absolutely. There are senior leadership from the university and all the different areas that you just mentioned, whether it's the medical school or Cornell Tech, Central Campus, throughout the university. Senior administrators have attended this. Martha Pollack has dropped the puck at one of the games. So it's been it's just from a senior leadership standpoint, yes, tremendous support. I also mentioned Andrew Tisch, who's an alum and a trustee of the university. He's in attendance every year with his family. They've made this kind of part of their Thanksgiving weekend in terms of being there available. And he actually was one of the originators of coming up with the idea of the Kelly Harkness Cup. He had a friend on the that was a trustee of Boston University, and they got together and kind of developed that idea, and that's kind of a neat little piece to this as well.
Right. You mentioned the Kelly Harkness Cup. One of the names is tied to BU. One of the names is tied to Cornell, right?
Correct, yes. They're both former coaches from Cornell and Boston University.
Right. Jack Kelly of BU and Ned Harkness of Cornell. This was introduced 10 years ago. Can you give us a sense of how the players prepare for the game? Because obviously for the upperclassmen, they've done this a couple of times, but for first-year players, whether you're a freshman, sophomore, or junior, this is a big deal to step foot onto the ice of a professional hockey team in New York City in front of a sellout audience, as opposed to playing at Lina Rink or any of the other college rinks.
Sure. Well, I certainly can't speak, from a coaching perspective.
Sure.
But what I can say is I know that this is also a recruiting tool for our program, knowing that they're going to be playing a yearly game at Madison Square Garden certainly comes into play. And to be a freshman at either school, and to know you're going to be on the ice at Madison Square Garden with close to sellout capacity just has to be just a thrill, and something I'm sure them growing up have dreamed of playing. So
you mentioned that for Cornell Big Red players, they would get the opportunity to get on the ice at Madison Square Garden every year. But for BU, it's only every other year. Why is that? Why is the setup where Red Hot Hockey is every other year and on the off year, Cornell plays another team that's not BU?
Yeah, so it started off again with Boston University, and the thought was, okay, we'll have a game, and then we'll kind of see how it goes and maybe do it every other year to start, just to see what the enthusiasm is and to see if it's something that works out. And we found, from a Cornell's perspective, with our alumni and fans, that there wasn't a need to necessarily wait every other year. So we continued that effort, and we play another opponent on the off year of Boston University. So we've continued to do that. We do it on a yearly basis, and Boston University, again, every other year. So that's kind of what we decided from a Cornell's perspective. But certainly the matchup against Boston University is the truly the red-hot hockey rival, and has the game that is just a huge huge success.
Yeah, it's not quite the same when Cornell plays, say, Michigan or another team. It's fun, it's exciting, but it's not quite the same level of enthusiasm as when you've got Cornell versus BU. Jeff, can you give us can you help fix something for me? One thing I get really, really irritated about is when you're at MSG and the organist starts playing the songs as opposed to letting the Big Red Band do their thing. How does that all come together?
Well, it's kind of a blend of the Madison Square Garden overall event, right? Their game script of what they typically do, and there's nobody better in the market putting on an event than the folks at Madison Square Garden. So what we try to do is keep that experience, that professional big time experience, yet interjecting our bands and the college athletics to it. So it's a little bit of a blend. Our bands, both our university bands, are huge supporters and part of the game experience for our home games and away games, actually. So it's a little bit of a blend. We try to keep that overall Madison Square Garden type atmosphere, yet incorporating our bands. So when we score, the band of the scoring team will play. So that's kind of the balance, a little bit of a balance.
Well, and that's from the band. Then you have the fan base shouting at the opposition goalie, "It's all your fault," and calling him a sieve, which, is another special brand of fandom.
Which is great, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been able, which is a lot of those type traditions just kind of naturally come out, which is nice to see. And again, from alumni that are, were in school 30 years ago, and they remember some of those chants. So that's always exciting to see, be part of the
and
event.
Of course, MSG has built on this. They now host Harvard versus Yale hockey games too, but Cornell versus BU was really the first. Jeff, as we wrap this up, what have you been surprised by? What are you kind of secretly thrilled about when it comes to Red Hot Hockey?
Again, I think it's probably just the audience itself, from just the different support that we get. Again, it's a tremendous amount of support we get from our alumni, but even the present students in general. It's just nice to see that whole blend of current students to alumni within the university. And I think that's what makes it so special. It's not just a kind of a college home game or a campus home game. It's truly a neutral site that has such a broad range of audience from both universities.
Yeah, both schools have some pretty college hockey crazed fan bases, and
absolutely,
you really see it in full bloom at MSG every other year, Thanksgiving weekend. Jeff, I really appreciate your joining us today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate the time.
It's been a pleasure. Jeff Hall, Deputy Athletic Director for External Relations at Cornell University, on the upcoming Red Hot Hockey game between Cornell's Big Red and BU's Terriers at Madison Square Garden. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Jeff Hall. He's the Senior Associate Director of Athletics for Sports Marketing at Cornell University, in a special conversation with Scarlett. Coming up, we turn to the world of boxing with the president of Top Rank Boxing. That is straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr, along with Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer. Top-ranked boxing has been involved with some of the world's greatest fighters and some of the biggest fights of all time, and now it's looking to bring the sport to a new generation of fans. Here to take us through how top-ranked boxing is working to capture a new audience, we welcome top-ranked boxing's president, Todd DeBuff. Todd! Welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
I'm so happy to be here. I've been a big fan listening to a number of your shows, so I want to help clear the air of some of the interpretation that I hear out there. Too.
Yeah. Well, can I still ask, are you related in a way to Bob Arum? Am I right about that?
Son-in-law. Yes, I am. Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes, he's married to my mother.
Oh, right. All right. Which brings us to old school action here with Bob Arum, because he founded this promotional company way back in 1973, which I need to stop that because I was still alive back then. can you tell us what has changed from the Bob Arum era to boxing today?
Well, I mean, I think the Bob Arum era is really back in the 70s. But, you know, to keep in mind, I mean, he was involved with Muhammad Ali in 1966. And that's how he got into the business. So you're talking about a man that was at the forefront of social change. He was his lawyer and his promoter, with the late Jim Brown, who introduced him to the Nation of Islam as Ali was supposedly not getting his fair share. So you're really talking about an iconic figure in history when you talk about Bob Arum. But when you talk about the sport of boxing and you go back to the 70s, you know, you're talking about one of the highest rated shows ever on ABC, and was Ali and Spinks.
Yep.
You know, you talk about 3.5, over the air networks. You know, you barely had a fourth channel at the time, and boxing was a mainstay. It was one of the big sports there, and people glued to the televisions just like they glued to the radios to listen to Joe Louis and Sugar Ray Robinson. And boxing has been a wonderful platform to grow media. So when you look at the sport of boxing and then you look at technology and media today, it keeps growing. And Bob Arum was at the forefront of that, taking it from over-the-air network to premium cable to basic cable to closed circuit and everything.
Well, Todd, one of the ways that the sport is really changing and it's forcing change is the rise of mixed mutual, is MMA, really, and the UFC and the PFL and all that's going on there. And now you have these crossover bouts, right? Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou. I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on all that. Should we, as viewers, as boxing fans, expect to see more, mixed martial arts versus boxing? I mean, how does that all work out?
You know, the evolution of combat sports and, you know, the whiteboard of what UFC did to create the MMA was unbelievable. They did a great job doing it. It is a different, it's like I say to everybody, it's like, hey, Roger Federer is the, or Djokovic may be the greatest tennis player of all times, but, put them on a ping pong table just because they have a racket doesn't make them the greatest ping pong table, or put them in a squash court doesn't make them the best one, squash player of all time. There are different sports, there are different techniques, and there are different disciplines. I think having the overall awareness of people aware of combat sports is good for both categories. I think you look at the demographics, we're very multicultural and young, and that the overlap is not that big between the two. So when you look at the size of it, it becomes globally very, very big.
Well, Todd, you know, I'm sure you're aware. I mean, you know, one of the things that is just taking over, not just boxing, not just MMA, is Middle Eastern money and how it's finding its way into a lot of these sports, how it's disrupting these sports. And I'm just curious to hear your thoughts and how that might or might not be impacting boxing.
Well, so we're at the end of October, we did the Fury and Ganu fight from Saudi Arabia, and it was a wonderful experience for us. And when I went there, I, you know, didn't know much about it. I had been to parts of the Middle East. I had been to Qatar for the World Cup. I had been to UAE, a number of times, but I hadn't been to Saudi Arabia. What I saw, and I'm going to give you a little bit of my history. I was born in Las Vegas, and in 1967, and as a kid, Las Vegas had a patina about it that was just Sin City. It was a gambling town. It was a place where people, you know, went and did bad things, and nobody really gave it that much credibility. But it used entertainment as a place to, you know, bring people there. And boxing was one of those. And from my experience, that is what I experienced, those things as I saw the World Cup at Qatar. They used the sport to bring popularity to Qatar, and how the Saudis had their Riyadh season, and they wanted to put on a really big event for people in the region to go to. So I equate that. The other piece, which is the investment in sports, that is different, that I haven't had a look into or haven't had, you know, what their thinking is, only as basically them bringing in big events to drive awareness as they grow their markets and have big Western appeal.
And Michael, as you're aware, I mean, Tyson Fury's, I think, facing off against Alexander Usyk in Riyadh in February, go figure.
That's right. And speaking of title fights, a title fight for you guys in Las Vegas to coincide with the F1 race is something that you enjoy. Is you're converging sporting events, big sporting events, to capture new audiences.
Yes, and I think what we're all seeing is, we're seeing that there's a lot of headwinds with a lot of content out there, a lot of distractions. People have impulses to, you know, get distracted to do whatever it is. And there's so much content out there today. And we felt that putting up a big event when there's this big week of anticipation in Las Vegas for Formula One, where they got a 3.5 mile track running through the strip. I could never believe this, right? and simultaneously, like I said, being in Las Vegas and now thinking that there's going to be a Super Bowl there. I mean, I was a Running Rebel ball boy, back in the 80s. I mean, to think a Super Bowl and a Formula One, this makes no sense. I don't get it. I'm like, what's going on? People are loving us. So yes. I think it's great. So we're going to be doing a Thursday night as well for the Super Bowl. As you know, the Super Bowl, everybody comes to the town of the Super Bowl. All the media is there, and we're going to activate with our media partner, ESPN, and everybody, to bring them a high-level prize fight.
Yeah, you're right. The days of the Silver Slipper Hotel are gone, Damien.
Well, Todd,
I forgot about that one.
Todd, it's interesting you mentioned ESPN there, and I have to hit you on that because, when I think of boxing back in the good old days, I think of pay-per-view, And, Top Rank, you are the guys who launched, really back in 2017, if I'm not mistaken, that partnership with ESPN and Disney. Talk to us a little bit about that and how that's going for you and how that's going for Top Rank.
Well, first of all, the partnership is amazing. It has been terrific. And it's been a real big pivot. I think, if we go back in history, kind of we talked about when you mentioned Bob in 1973, premium cable was smart. We're talking about it right now. Everybody's talking about what are the subs at? What is everybody's subs? Is there cord cutting? Whatever. Premium cable, HBO came in and said, let's go grab this sport that's been doing great ratings on wide range, on over-the-air network. Put it behind a small, put it on a paywall, behind a paywall on a small distributed network. No commercials, and make everybody pay for it, and then we'll hold on to our subs. That was the model.
NFL didn't go for it, NBA didn't go for it, but boxing went for it. So what we saw back in about 2015, 2016 was, wait a second, premium cable is an entertainment channel. It has no 30-second commercials. It has no commercial partnership appeal. It really is not a sports platform. And they may do stuff like Real Sports and things like that, but it really didn't feel like that's what, where major sports were going. ESPN obviously was the mothership. And we felt, let's put boxing next to the NFL, college football, NBA. You know, NHL wasn't there, but all the other big franchises they had and properties, and bring it from out of a paywall and into the basic cable universe. And it's been incredibly successful for all of us.
Old man Barr here, and I want to go back. First of all, I'm going to bring back an old memory. You mentioned about a tennis player going on the ping pong table. Damian, Todd, do you guys remember an old series called The Superstars that first aired on ABC? There was a competition, and Rod Laver was in this competition, and they had him playing ping pong, and everybody else was like, what the hell is this? He's going to beat the living daylights out of us. Well, he beat the living daylights out of him. And it's something that I think of in the 70s, especially something you guys were connected with back in 1974. And I saw this. Top Rank promoted the Snake River Canyon jump with Evel Knievel. I saw it. And as he's coming off the chute, all of a sudden, the parachute opens, and I'm like, uh-oh, this ain't good. Now, you see, the parachute's not supposed to open off on the launch pad, and that's what happened. But with that and ABC's Wide World of Sports, do you think Top Rank would have been where it is today?
Well, I think, I think a lot of in business, and specifically in sports, is always looking forward, right, and always being able to adjust, and always, you know, being able to think about what's next, right? Where are we going, and how do we keep the sport as relevant as possible? And I think when you look at the NFL and you see them doing, you know, games in Europe, mm-hmm. and when you saw Adam Silver jump in Asia early on, and even when we talked about, like, when YouTube came out there and everyone used to give everybody takedown notices, right, because you're stealing our content. But it actually worked for them, and the NBA did a great job in doing that. I think that you always have to be moving forward. And I'm not necessarily sure that just one event, but I think the power of live sports, being in today's world, the only thing that is appointment television today for people to watch, to jump to their televisions if it's watching the Olympics, the World Cup, the Super Bowl, college football championship, and I think keep pushing forward. And I think Bob has done a great job empowering a great team with us to keep looking forward and, you know, having a great young social department that's pushing content out there, because it's evergreen. It just keeps going and going. So I think the ABC Wide World of Sports, I mean, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Watching, you know, the skier going off the jump was amazing. You can't ever forget that one. But that was like a mainstay for us. I remember the music, right, the open of it. And I think that's the power of sports and the beauty of it. And those properties that have expanded on it, and like even the UFC, they've done a brilliant job whiteboarding a business, and not only they created a whole category. And I think you have to give a lot of people, you know, a lot of credit who are able to keep moving forward and looking at the industry different every day as it moves quickly with technology.
That's right, Damian. The human drama of broadcasting competition, baby.
You know, Todd, before we leave you, I just have to ask you this one question. You know, Francis Ngannou, you mentioned it, you know, he great fight against Tyson Fury, but for the WBC to announce him as a top 10 heavyweight following the loss, I mean, that is something special, no? I mean, like, and to your point about kind of combat fighting in general and how, you know, it's getting really gray, that the lines are not as black and white as delineated as they once were, you know, is this a good thing for the sport?
I was caught off guard a little bit when we did the when Furyan Ngannou was announced, and I got absolute barrage with disdain from traditional, you know, sweet science, you know, press people that were like, this is gross, this is terrible, and just started going off on it. And the one thing I said was, this is a little bit different because heavyweights are heavyweights.
Yeah.
And you have, they're not putting 4 and 5, 6 combinations together. That's very uncharacteristic. Now, Tyson Fury could put that because he has very, very quick hands and very agile, but most of them are just, they thunderous punches, one at a time, maybe a jab right hand too. So therefore, the probability of landing one of those thunderous punches is pretty high. Where opposed to when we saw Mayweather and McGregor fight,
right.
That was just poetry in motion against somebody that was trying to fight with him that couldn't match the speed, the IQ, or the combination. So I say in the heavyweights, anything can happen because of size and power, and you're going to get touched up. And I think that's what we saw in that fight. Do I think he did so much better than I thought he would do in Ngannou? I do think that, you know, Tyson takes a lot of responsibility for it. He says, I'm the one took him a little lightly. I overlooked it. But he had to dig deep on that one. And I think Francis did a great job. Wow. Where he goes in the rankings, I don't know. That's a whole different story.
Well, Michael, I think the undercard is going to be Rocky Balboa versus Thunderlips, the ultimate male.
I know we got to scoot, but can you imagine if Muhammad Ali, at the top of his game today, if he was alive, you think he made money back then. Can you imagine, Todd, how much money he would make now?
I can't imagine it. I mean, I can't even think of it. I mean, and how about this? How about his just seamless connectivity to the world as it can through having the power of the internet?
Yeah.
Right. We talk about, like, you know, the influencers, right? We talk about Mr. Beast and all these great, you know, and the Paul brothers and Kylie Jenner and people that are influencing so much, right? And it's like, imagine Muhammad Ali with an iPhone or, you know, video and his just eloquent way of talking trash and having fun and engaging with people. He was the most popular athlete in the world. Imagine what he would have been with that mechanism of technology today.
You thought we knew what rope-a-dope was then. We would know. That would be just part of the vernacular now.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's the power of what we're seeing today in sports. And, you know, it's the power of what we can do as properties and athletes and entertainers. We can control our own destiny, and we can connect to an audience, and everybody can connect to an audience with not having to go through the traditional pipeline of limited broadcasters. And that is where we're starting to see big changes, very big changes.
Todd DeBuff, president of Top Rank Boxing, thank you so much, sir, for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. We really do appreciate it, and we know you got a busy schedule, and thank you again.
Thank you guys for having me. Big fan.
That's Todd DeBuff, president of Top Rank Boxing. Now, up next on the show, we turn to mixed martial arts with Professional Fighters League founder, chairman, and co-owner Don Davis. You're listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Thanks for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr, along with Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer. The Professional Fighters League, or PFL, is the only mixed martial arts organization with a sports season format, with fighters competing in a regular season, playoffs, and then a championship each year. The sport is one of the fastest growing sports in the world, and PFL is helping to lead the way. And here to talk with us about the league is founder and chairman Don Davis. Don, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Great to be here talking fighting with you.
Woo, Lord, let's talk some fighting. Let's talk now with the PFL. You are the only organization in MMA with the sports season format. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, if people are fans of other sports like the NBA or the NFL, the Professional Fighters League is just the same. By that, I mean we have a regular season, playoffs, and championship. It's win and advance, lose, and go home. So all fighters start the season on an equal playing field. Meritocracy and transparency. The PFL is not like the UFC. In the UFC, Dana White makes the matches, chooses who will fight, does the rankings. Well, that's great entertainment, but that's not a sport. In the Professional Fighters League, all fighters start on an equal playing field. You win, you get the next fight. You win four times, you become the champion that year. You get $1 million bonus. So pure meritocracy, just like the NBA. So, for example, November 24th, Friday, Black Friday, is our championship. Everybody's fought three times, and they've won three times to make that final. So all six weight classes, six final belts, $6 million on the line. That is the culmination of a season in the PFL, just like other sports.
Sounds pretty straightforward, and thank you for explaining that. One thing that separates you from the UFC as well is what you say about your leadership in technology and innovation. You come from the VC world, so this is a world you're familiar with. Can you tell us a little bit about what distinguishes PFL from the UFC when it comes to technology, when it comes to innovation?
Yeah, I've spent 30 years building disruptive companies and innovative products. So we look at the MMA space through that lens. How do we make the viewing experience next gen, and how do we make it more interesting for fans, whether you're new to the sport or a diehard? So we have the PFL Smart Cage. It's a series of chips and capture cameras. And what does that do for viewers? Punch impact, kick speed, real-time gaming, ref cam, artificial intelligence scoring. So think if you were watching football without the first down yellow line. Think if you're watching baseball without pitch speed or the strike zone. Those would be very hard sports to understand, and they'd be less enjoyable. Well, the Professional Fighters League with our Smart Cage has brought all that innovation to MMA for the very first time. So if you're watching a PFL fight, you can understand what these athletes do a lot more. You could see the hardest punch in this round. You could see our AI scoring who is winning this round. You could see the knockup from the ref's view close up. So that PFL Smart Cage makes it way more interesting if you've never watched MMA, way more data and analytics if you're a diehard.
But Don, it's also about the talent, right? And what you've done successfully is you've gotten Francis Ngannou, you've gotten Jake Paul, some of the others to come over there. And some of the things that you're doing a little bit differently than the UFC is you're allowing them to actually box. Talk to us a little bit about that. What are you allowing your talent to do that's so different?
Yeah, I founded PFL to be a fighter first league. That really has three elements to it. One is opportunity. Prior to the PFL coming along, MMA was a one-company town. And if you didn't like the terms of that company, too bad. You had to take it. So we've given you now two choices if you're a fighter. Two great organizations with global distribution that's equal, PFL or UFC. Number two is more flexibility. If there's something important to you, like boxing, which was important to Francis, or boxing, which is important to Clarissa Shields or Jake Paul, you can do that also. We think that elevates your brand and elevates PFL. And number three, more money. We all want more money, whether you work at CBS or whether you box for the heavyweight championship of the world. And in the PFL, we pay the same per fight, but we give you bonus opportunity. So for terms of Francis Ngannou, he makes more pay-per-view points. And the opportunities for Jake Paul, he owns equity in our league. For fighters on the championship on November 24th, $1 million bonus for every one of them who win the belt. So you have more opportunity, more flexibility, more money. That's the fighter first PFL.
See, that's like with Scarlett and Damian, because they do TV, they get more pay-per-view points than the radio guy over here.
You got it. You got it.
Let me ask a question about the rumors, the PFL. Will they be purchasing Bellator? That's a smaller fight promotion from Viacom.
Yeah, I couldn't comment on specific things that may be happening. But what I would say in general is there are great fighters everywhere. UFC wouldn't want you to know this, but it's true. There are about 2,000 top fighters in the world. UFC has 600 of them. Think of this as like when Julius Erving was playing basketball, but he wasn't in the NBA. There weren't enough outlets. That's MMA today. So PFL already has top talent. 25% of our roster is top 25 ranked in the world. That's an insane stat. That's independent. Fight Matrix is their only organization that ranks everybody regardless of where you fight. But Bellator, the organization you mentioned, they were the only other promotion before PFL came along. So they have great talent too. If we could put together and acquire all those fighters at Bellator, we would have superior fighter roster to UFC. That would be interesting, and that would be great for fans.
I got to ask you, Don, also about investments in the league. Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund has a sports fund that they created that has invested in your league. Can you tell us a little bit more about the significance of getting a big Middle Eastern investor like the Saudis and how that opens the door to more investment from the region and what you'll do with that extra funds?
Yes, yeah, Scarlett, you're absolutely right. Surge is the new investment arm for sports for Saudi Arabia of their PIF fund. PFL was the very first investment. They saw the opportunity to have a co-leader in MMA, not a number two company, a co-leader as big as UFC with the Professional Fighters League. They invested $100 million, and they're open for business to invest more with us. That money will go into three areas. One, more fighter talent. How do we attract, develop, and retain more of the top fighters around the world? Number two, more international expansion. The PFL vision of MMA is more expansive, more global, and more advanced than UFC. There are 650 million fans around the world in MMA. That's the third biggest fan base. Trails only soccer and basketball. Most people don't know that, but 80% are not in the U.S. So it's kind of like the soccer fan base. Very global, very global. So we've launched PFL Europe. That's the own product for Europe. Fighters in Europe, all prime time in Europe, all events in Europe. We're launching PFL Mideast next year. We're launching PFL Africa in 2025. So we are building at PFL the Champions League of MMA. Fights for fans and fighters in region. UFC's never done it. They take one event per year to each region. We're going to have these leagues in region year-round. That's the second area that the Surge money will go to. And the final area is just building more awareness. The PFL product, fantastic. More next gen, more interesting than even UFC. But our brand awareness is low. We're only 5 years old. They're 30 years old. We haven't had a marketing budget. So that's the third place the money will go to.
Don, whenever Michael complains about what he's getting paid here at Bloomberg, I can't help but think about the advent of sport gambling and how that can change, you know, Michael's life and his discretionary spend. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, the next gen viewing experience, about real time data, about intra-game bets and how that's coming to the PFL, how that's coming to MMA, and what you're doing to welcome that into the league.
Yeah, PFL is the only sport right now broadcast on ESPN that you see real-time odds change every minute. So one, it's interesting if you're a gamer. But two, it's interesting just if you're a fan. We all want to know who's winning that fight. And what you're seeing is 10 betting odds put together on the screen. So minus 250, minus 240, minus 180 is happening every minute. So you're seeing what the world's gamblers and the world's odds are saying about this fight in real time. Super interesting in fight, because unlike sports, we know the score. It's 82-80 in a basketball game. We don't know the score in fighting. So the gambling odds are both interesting if you're betting on it or interesting if you're watching it. But next year, it's going to get more advanced. Prop bets. What's the hardest punch in this round? Is the over-under of Francis Ngannou 30 miles an hour on that punch in the third round or not? So once you start to have more than winning and losing, and it's prop bets and it's by round, the PFL Smart Cage data allows that, and you're going to see that in 2024.
You guys have some great major brand sponsors, about 24. You didn't do it with sorcery. You did it with good old hard work, including Geico and the U.S. Marines.
Yeah, there's two things that PFL did. We've brought in more blue chip sponsors in MMA that have never been there before. Bose, IBM, never been in combat before. And why? We have a season, and that's how they're used to buying. They buy the NBA for a season. UFC's one-off events. And number two, we're advancing this sport to be a blue chip major sport. Think of it, the sixth major sports league. So we do things that way, not in the old combat way. And we've been very fortunate to have 24 sponsors join us on this mission. And that's only year 5.
My goodness, man, you guys got it going on. And I wish you very well, because as the future continues, old geezer Barr here, first of all, I got to learn, it's not a ring, it is a cage, you know, and, I see the old Gillette commercials and I'm like, no, that's not it anymore, man. It really isn't even brand new. That's how bad I am.
That's how bad. But you know what? November 24th, you're going to watch the PFL Championship on ESPN pay-per-view, and you're going to be hooked, and you're going to be educated, and you're going to be all in, and it all will work out from there.
And one thing that won't change, I'll have a beer in my hand watching it on ESPN. Don Davis, founder, chairman, Professional Fighters League, thank you so much, sir, for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's Professional Fighters League's founder and chairman, co-owner, Don Davis. If you missed any of that, it is on demand now on the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. Find that on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcast. And another story that broke this week, we are keeping our eye on the Oakland A's, and it's pretty much official now. The A's are moving to Las Vegas. It was unanimously approved by Major League Baseball team owners, cementing the sport's first relocation since 2005. That's when the Montreal Expos moved and became the Washington Nationals. It comes after years of complaints about the Oakland Coliseum and an inability to gain government assistance for a new ballpark in the Bay Area. Of course, we're going to follow that story, but don't you worry. It's coming up soon, and we're going to dive into it on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We're here each and every week at the same time, plus online wherever you get your podcast, and you can follow on X at Big Bar Sports.
And you can follow me on X at Scarlett Fu.
And I'm on X at D Sassauer.
Thank you for joining us. Tune in again next week for the latest on the stories moving big money in the world of sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.